The Buckmaster Radio Program is paid for by Buckmaster Communications, LLC. The views expressed are not necessarily those of KVOI, Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or their sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, and together, a hearty welcome to the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday, April 18th, 2023, the show in our 13th year. We are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Without further ado, we go on the live line to the capital of the state of Arizona, up to Phoenix. Andres Cano is the House Minority Leader in the Arizona House of Representatives. Representative Cano is in his third two-year term, currently representing District 20, which is basically the Tucson area. Representative Cano, how are you, sir?
Hi, Bill. It's good to hear your voice.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. By my reckoning, we're about at the kind of the symbolic point, about 100 days into this legislative session. And what makes headlines here in our papers and in the news here in Tucson, the Republican lawmakers continuing to send on to the governor legislation that they know darn well, Andres Cano, will be vetoed. It seems like a huge waste of time.
It absolutely is a huge waste of time, Bill, and you just have to pick your issue. I call it the flavor of the month. Is it going to be drag queens that we're going to be attacking, our LGBTQ loved ones? Is it going to be putting firearms in our schools? I mean, the veto-worthy legislation that's been sent to Governor Hobbs has absolutely been astonishing. She will surpass the number of vetoes that Governor Napolitano had to issue in her first year as governor, and will do that really because the Republican majority that has a one-vote majority in both the House and the Senate refuses to acknowledge what the governor laid out in her State of the State address, which was, let's come together on bipartisan solutions for our state. Let's stop the nonsense, stop the division. I'm less than optimistic about what next session is going to look like in an election year, but I'm grateful that we have a little bit of some breathing room with the governor's veto pen.
Well, we need to get down to business here. As you well realize, there's a little over 2 months left in the fiscal year. Andres Cano, give our listeners an overview. Where are we in this session?
We are done with our committees. We are on spring break right now in April, usually what is time to negotiate the budget. Last year, I was proud to be a part of a bipartisan delegation that sent the former governor a bipartisan budget. And now, both as a Southern Arizona and a Tucsonan and a Democratic leader for 29 members, have been actively engaged in conversations with the governor's office, who in partnership with the Republican majority, have had some progress on bipartisan agreement for a budget. And I think that's optimistic, Bill, for the folks who are wanting to wonder if there will be a shutdown this coming June because of our inability to work together on the budget. I don't think that's the case. So I'm here to let you know that the conversations are progressing in a way that I feel good about. But most importantly, this is kind of where we started last year as well. There's a contingency of the Republican majority that would never vote for any extension of a budget, a continuation of a budget, because they just have a philosophical disagreement about the role of government. And when that conversation comes up, Bill, I ask, what are you going to cut? Are you going to cut the public infrastructure that you rely on to get from work to your home? Are you going to cut our state's investment in water conservation, in addressing the housing crisis? I mean, there's a role for the state of Arizona to play in helping advance some of these core issues. And so I do believe that Democrats will join with the majority to pass a bipartisan budget, hopefully in the next month or two.
Well, last week we had the head of the Arizona State Troopers on our program, and I think our listeners were shocked to hear him say that the communication system is so old here in southern Arizona that there was a case over in Vail where a highway patrolman had to wave down a motorist to use a cell phone to call in a life-threatening situation. Just intolerable, Andres Cano.
Mm-hmm. I will be doing a aerial tour with the Department of Public Safety this coming Friday to address the needs in our state. Certainly, we've got to ensure that our first responders have access to the proper telecommunication equipment to be able to respond to emergencies. And I do think, Bill, that this is a byproduct of many, many years. Despite having Southern Arizona Republican legislators, people like Vince Leach, who for years was a key negotiator in the appropriations process, we hardly ever saw here in Southern Arizona those kind of investments coming. And I don't know if that was because we, you know, are Baja Arizona, but I think ultimately what I'm committed to now as Democratic leader is ensuring that we are making investments across the state where the former governor and the former Republican legislature has looked the other way. I'm not here to say that Republican or Democratic ideas under a Democratic governor will be considered any one particular direction based on party preference, but I think what we have now is a full needs assessment of our state, of where we need to make investments, and that's my commitment. And I know that we have 28 other Democrats in the House who are looking to be the adults in the room, Bill.
With us on the live line is State Representative Andres Cano. Representative Cano is the House Minority Leader in the Arizona House of Representatives. So what kind of a budget surplus are we looking at? And I, for one, would like to use a lot of that budget surplus to bring our infrastructure up to date.
The Financial Advisory Committee at the legislature is a nonpartisan group of economists, primarily from our universities, who are tracking our state's fiscal strength and performance. They told legislators last week that we have about $2.4, $2.5 billion in one-time revenues that can be allocated. The problem that we have, Bill, is that the state's economists, including the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, which is the entity that reviews all of our finances as on behalf of the legislature, there's practically zero for ongoing. So what does that mean? It means we have resources, but if we want to look at one-time resources, $2.5 billion, if we want to look, for instance, at compensation for first responders, for teachers, which would be in the ongoing bucket, Bill, there's not that much more capacity. And so we're kind of at a critical juncture where decades of tax cuts and carve-outs, you know, where more than 90% of Arizona corporations on this tax day are paying just $50 to do business in the state of Arizona. We've got to look at the whole picture. And I'm delighted that we have a little bit more one-time revenues, but one-time revenues make for bad fiscal planning. It is not fiscally conservative to say we want to invest in a certain program, but just fund it for this year. Our needs will continue beyond 365 days. So I would call it a perfect storm, Bill, right now. And we've got to figure out what that solution is going to be. These universal vouchers, the ESAs that I know are very popular in some parts of the state of Arizona, will absolutely bankrupt our state if we don't add accountability measures into it. Overnight, there's been an exponential increase in families taking advantage of this program. It would right now take $1 billion to get our teachers back up to the national average or to the national average. They've never been there. And so lots of tough decisions ahead, Bill. And my commitment is to ensure that Governor Hobbs has the ability to make her case for strong investments, but while also recognizing that she is still inheriting last year's budget with former Governor Ducey's priorities. And I'm thankful that we have 3 more years and for that matter, 7 more years under Governor Hobbs.
All right. Before we wrap it up, the optimistic note that you sounded, I want to return to that as we close, that you said here on the show that within 30 days you're optimistic that we'll really see some concrete action on a new fiscal plan for the 12 months beginning July 1st. Is that correct?
I'm optimistic, Bill.
Okay. Let's end it right there then, Andres Cano. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Representative Andres Cano, the House Minority Leader in the Arizona House of Representatives. All right, let's talk about, on an optimistic note, continuing with that theme. I'm always optimistic when I start talking about Steve and the team up at Mona's Danish Bakery. And there are a lot of people that share that sentiment because folks love Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. There's a lot to love there. Just take one look at the bakery case, especially if you're there when they open the door at 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Saturday. Sunday, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. They're open now for a great lunch. Check it out, breakfast or lunch at Mona's Danish Bakery. Take a break right here. Buckmaster on a Tuesday. Shelley Fishman with us from Europe right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Let's go now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management over to Europe across the pond to Mr. Shelley Fishman, who by my reckoning he's completed today 2 full weeks over in Europe. Shelley, how are you?
I am well, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing real well. So this is coming up on the beginning of week 3. How is it going over there?
Well, the vacation's great. The weather is really miserable. We like to go away in April to Europe, and it's usually great. But we've had day after day after day after day after rain and a little bit of wind and, you know, cold temperatures. But it doesn't make what we're seeing any less gorgeous.
Well, yeah, you're having a lot of opportunities. When the weather's bad, there's plenty of opportunities with beautiful museums and things in Europe. Today on the market, Shelley, as you know, we have a rather flat situation, but still there's a couple of shoes that are waiting to drop. Interest rates, and we've talked about this before, the looming debt ceiling. We had the leader of the House yesterday assuring people that he's going to get this done. Let's hope so, Shelley Fishman.
Well, yeah, as you know, my feeling is that somebody has to blink, but they need to get this done. They need to get it done in a way that will make the markets and the world economies feel that this isn't something that they need to worry about for the next year or so, and then we can get back to normal. But if this keeps on getting pushed up to the line and people begin to look at this as an uncertain possibility in terms of what the United States would do, then that could, you know, just kind of snowball out of control. This is not anything to play with, and I hope our politicians deep down understand that.
Well, you know, the bottom line here is that the whole rising interest rates are doing some damage that we had not really anticipated. Is that correct, Shelley?
You know, the unanticipated, unintended consequences of the world dominant currency acting pretty much unilaterally is something that we have never experienced before, because we didn't have this kind of pressure on raising interest rates to control inflation before, when the world was as integrated and fully unself-reliant, if you will, as it is now. So I'll give you an example. We raise interest rates. The Brits, you know, feel that they have to raise interest rates to keep up so that the parity between, not parity, but the relationship between the dollar and the British pound doesn't get destroyed. And so the Brits keep on raising interest rates. But what's happening in England and in most of the UK is because of their outsized percentage of variable mortgages, where we here in the United States, you know, there are variable mortgages, but for the most part, people have fixed mortgages. In the UK and in many other parts of Europe, variable mortgages are much more prominent. As a result, people believe with interest rates going up that they're going to have less money to spend, and that's not an irrational belief, that's just the truth. And so they cut back on their consumer spending, which cuts back on their economies. So that we've talked about what happens when you raise interest rates and other people have to follow, the things that we know get affected by rising interest rates. But this is one that bleeds almost instantly into consumer spending. And so when you get the World Bank and the IMF talking about what's happening in the UK, and they're saying, here's an economy that was in trouble to begin with, largely because of Brexit, and now we're seeing very significant cutbacks in consumer spending that nobody anticipated was going to happen. So there's that. Then in Germany, which has been the strongest economy in the European, in Europe, we see that there's uncertainties caused by the war and energy supplies, and then interest rates go up, and people also have a problem with consumer spending, and so we see that Germany, which was on track to expand about 4%, probably not going to expand much more than 2% next year. That's a big hit. And so we see this kind of thing happening, and these are unintended consequences of something that we thought was pretty settled in economics, which is, you don't want to control inflation, you raise interest rates.
Shelley, let me ask you about, I know you've been speaking with Germans, and some of the Germans experienced life under communism in a divided Germany. They have a little different perspective than perhaps the other Germans who are not under communism.
Well, you put your finger on something that's very difficult to wrap your mind around. You have half the country, and population-wise, it was half the country, was East Germany. Half the country was West Germany. And this is a country that has been through, and let's not try to relitigate who's at fault and what they did, but this is a country that since 1870 has been through five or six different governments that were completely at odds with each other in terms of how they conducted the business of government. You had an imperial government led by an emperor that participated from about 1870 to 1919 in a world war. Then you had a republic that came out of that world war with massive reparations responsibilities and a democracy that hardly or barely worked. Then you had World War II and the whole Nazi government that began in 1933 and, just whipsawed people around. The country was devastated through 1945. And in 1946-47, we had a country occupied by the four Allied powers. And the types of government that Germans lived under from 1945, 1946 through 1989 were completely different. I mean, you had the Brits, you had the French, you had the United States, and then you had the Soviet Union. And the way people were educated, the way they were raised, the expectations they had as individuals were completely different in half the country from the other half. And then in 1989, 1990, we smashed the country together again.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, half that country had no idea how to exist in the other half. They had, sure, the same language, they even found ways to make parody out of their Deutschmarks. But if you went to school, not just elementary pre-college, but if you were educated in the university system in East Germany, you had an entirely different expectation about your life. You had a completely different training on how to deal with things like getting a job, interviewing for a job, what you could expect your life to be, could you grow? Could you rise in a company you worked for or whatever? You also had no property.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, half the country is unified with a half the country that doesn't understand each other.
Yes.
Now we're a generation into that, and we're only beginning to see, or the Germans are only beginning to realize, just how acutely different these halves of the country were in terms of how people led their lives and continue to lead them. And so that's something that the Germans, I hadn't anticipated, but that's something that the Germans are dealing with in a way that is very interesting when you talk to people who were raised in East Germany or people who were raised in West Germany, had relatives and friends on the East, either in East Berlin or in East Germany. And as they got together and the restrictions for travel were lifted, they found themselves kind of involved in a schism that they never anticipated.
All right, Shelley, where are you off to next?
So I'm in Prague right now. We're in the Czech Republic. We'll spend the next 5 or 6 days here and then off to Vienna. But I can't leave without talking about something I have absolutely no knowledge of whatsoever. We spent 2 days in Dresden. Dresden was completely bombed out at the end of World War II. Let's not relitigate that. They have rebuilt that city into a tourist paradise.
Wow.
It is one of the most gorgeous cities I have ever seen. Everything, all the old facades and everything are still there, but they have rebuilt everything on the inside. The city is spectacular.
Mm.
And, I walked around and I said, I didn't need to go to Vienna. I need to come back here.
Yeah. There you go. All right, Shelley.
We're
going to have to wrap it up there, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll take a break right here. We'll talk with our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks, coming up right after the break. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. This is a perfect time of year now that we're really into spring right now. And if you're looking at the garden and thinking, you know, there's some items there, some plants that just really, they look really haggard. They didn't really do that well through the winter. It was a very cold, by our standards, winter here, unusually cool. So now is a good time to think and maybe reevaluate the way the garden is looking. I know we've done that, kind of taken, looked at, sort of did a blueprint of the garden. Where do we want to go now into spring and into summer? Green Things is the place to go for having all of that done. And I love Green Things because one of the things, they're knowledgeable people over there that work at Green Things. And if you ask them, hey, I'd like such and such, something that's going to do well through the summer, they'll not only point you in the right direction, they will walk you to that particular plant on their 13-acre site at 3384 East River Road. They are open daily. They're in their 53rd year of business. And of course, when you're there, make sure you also visit their sister business right on site, Zocalo Village, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com are the two particular websites for you to keep in mind. Our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He's the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. Dr. Hendricks is a former Arizona Top School Superintendent. Dr. Hendricks is vice chair of the Interfaith Community Services, a Tucson-based organization comprised of over 120 faith communities dedicated to helping people in crisis by providing assistance with food, housing, employment, and health care. Bob, how are you?
Good, Bill. Sorry for the voice, a little bit of allergy right now.
But we are going to power through it. We've got a couple of segments with you, and you're going to work through it. We've got plenty of water there for you because we do want to hear what you have to say. Why don't we begin with this news of Basis Schools? The teachers there have voted to unionize. What do you make of it? How big a deal is it?
It's kind of an interesting development. I mean, if you look across the country, charter schools are starting to gain some momentum.
Yep.
In the union movement, about 12% of charter schools, I think, countrywide are actively pursuing a union agenda.
But traditionally, the charter school and the private school has not really been a fertile ground, Bob Hendricks, for the unions, has it?
No. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting dilemma because on the one hand, we always are careful to refer to charter schools as public schools.
Yes.
So if we're going to think of them as public schools, and this is going to be a legal interpretation, I'm going to predict, there is no collective bargaining for public schools in the state of Arizona.
Really?
In other words, unions have no traction. They have no authority to sit at the table, school districts. In fact, the term negotiations is never used. Hmm. It's always called meet and confer. It's a courtesy visit. And different districts handle in different ways.
How was it handled in your time over at the Flowing Wells School District when you had when you had unionized teachers, I assume, at Flowing Wells, were they invited then to come and talk about contracts or
what?
That's
exactly. Yeah. Invitation is the operative word. It's it's basically a collaborative experience between school districts, and some districts really foster that collaboration. Others say, I'll talk to you for 30 minutes, and ultimately...
Then you're out the door.
Yeah, ultimately, the school boards of individual districts in the state have the power to decide what benefits, what salaries, what other asks are complied with. Now, there's two associations in the state of Arizona. There's the Arizona Education Association, which I think most people are familiar with. They call themselves an association. Mm-hmm. They tend to act more like a union.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they can't act too much like a union in Arizona because they really don't have that authority. The second organization is the affiliate of the AFL-CIO, which is the American Federation of Teachers,
which in some states that, and I'm thinking of states like my home state of Illinois and in the Chicagoland, and
right.
in New York City, they're very powerful,
big time. Not here in Arizona.
Maybe over in Bay Area and L.A. too. So,
right.
but in Arizona.
But it's interesting because BASIS is affiliated themselves with the AFT.
Okay.
Which, of course, is their choice. And but again, either organization represents teachers and, in some cases, support staff, but they don't really have that authority to, push the matter beyond, a conversation.
Let's transition to, we had Representative Cano. You perhaps heard some of the conversation. He represents the Democrats, the leader of the Democrats in the Arizona House of Representatives. As I recall, he threw out a number on the cost of these, the charter academies. Is what's the term again?
The ESA?
Yes. He threw out a term of what that's going to cost the state of Arizona. And I believe he said $1 billion because we were talking about discretionary money and what the state has right now.
I've heard that number.
And that's
it doesn't compute for me. It's just too big of a number.
You know, $1 billion. And I want to transition to you joined our conversation briefly, but I'm glad you did, because you brought up a very good point when we had the Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tom Horn. He was our Friday Focus interview a week before last, and I'm glad you called in because you brought up this whole question of accountability for this particular program. And we kind of tried to pin down Tom Horn on that one, but I think that fell into the category of, well, he said it's up to the parents to make these decisions. But again, we asked, what about, who's keeping track here of the money?
Well, I particularly focus on homeschooling because it's a growing movement. There's a group of parents that are very passionate about homeschooling, and I know some of these folks, and the ones that I know work really, really hard to get the program together for their kids, and they, many of them are faith-based, and they believe in it. But there's another group of people who, quite honestly, are just collecting the money, and you don't have any accountability.
Right, and who is accountable to these people that are perhaps gaming the system, if you will?
Well, to start with, to be a homeschooler, as a parent, you have to make application to the county superintendent.
Okay.
And there are a number of, not very many, but there are forms that you have to fill out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to show... certificate of residence. You have to show birth certificate and so forth. But once you're registered with the county superintendent, a county superintendent basically just keeps track of who's out there that's in that system, so that if somebody's wandering the streets, I suspect, and they attest that their child is being homeschooled, it could be checked back with the county superintendent. But in terms of the accountability we're talking about, which is academic performance, academic gain, zero.
No testing, right?
No testing.
There's no testing. And Superintendent Horn acknowledged that. He knows that there is. So what's the gauge if there's no testing for the homeschoolers? How do we know how they're doing?
We don't. We don't know how they're doing, Bill. And I guess, you know, the rub for me is that we're paying, the state is paying, is supporting that program. And we have a right to know, not only for the benefit of the youngsters and their progress, but we have a right to know as a state, because we hold every public school, including charters, we hold their feet to the fire in terms of how they're academically progressing. That's how we measure the success of a school. And we're very quick to criticize a school if they're not being successful. But you're going to homeschool, it's blank slate.
Look at the heat TUSD takes for their so-called underachieving or even failing schools.
Right.
But then you've got the homeschooling situation and there's no accountability.
There's no accountability. And the only time a test would be given is if the parent decides to re-enter the child into the public school system.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. But when we come back with Dr. Robert Hendricks, I felt there was a little news that was made out of that interview with Superintendent Horn. And the news was about the so-called book banning in Arizona. We're going to address that with Dr. Robert Hendricks as we continue on the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday. Be right back.
Great.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news.
You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line for our telephone interviews presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I want to talk right now about our great sponsor over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many listeners over to that area. They've heard me on the radio talking about it, and many of these people have never been over to that area. Maybe they've been traveling on I-10, and they keep on going past Lordsburg, but they see the sign that says Silver City. Well, you take a left at Lordsburg, and you go up to about a mile-high elevation, and it's a beautiful area, and there's a lot to do. The Gila National Wilderness, America's first national wilderness, designated, I believe, back when Teddy Roosevelt was the president, and there's also the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument just north of Silver City. So it's a great outing. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, and there you will find all sorts of temptations recreation-wise and suggestions on where to stay and where to eat. All right, let's continue talking education with Dr. Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona, very well known in the education circles, former superintendent of Flowing Wells School District. In fact, there's actually a school, the Robert Hendricks Elementary School in Flowing Wells. Do you ever drop in and see?
I sure do.
I'm the guy. I'm here. I'm Bob Hendricks, and this school is, it's got my name out front. Yeah. So you do drop by, huh?
I do.
All right. So I was mentioning the interview that we did here on the program. We spent the pretty much the full hour with Tom Horn. I've known Mr. Horn, well, it seems like forever, going back to when he was Attorney General and when he was on, when we had him on the television show on Arizona Illustrated on many occasions. So he is, I said to him, what about this whole thing about this effort to ban books? And it surprised me, maybe you were surprised as well, Dr. Hendricks, to hear him say he's not in favor of banning any books in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, I would not have expected that response from him.
No. So where is it coming from? State lawmakers and individual school districts?
Apparently so. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of interested in seeing, you know, how he's going to deliver that message if he feels strongly about it. Because let's face it, Bill, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction has some pretty limited authority, but what that position does have is a bully pulpit.
Yes,
where they can the person representing the state of education can, you know, convince, present to legislative bodies, to parent groups, you know, their position on things. And, you know, I think about some of the past state superintendents. The one that I remember most fondly is Carolyn Warner.
Carolyn Warner,
who, you know, epitomized what public education advocacy should look like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
she was out amongst the people in the community, and she always spoke in favor of what public education should do for our populace. And Tom Horn has that same opportunity, and I hope that he uses it.
So in Arizona, it's basically a situation where the superintendent of public instruction sits on the Arizona Board of Education.
Correct.
Has a seat there. But is it safe to say that the power in education rests with local school districts in this state?
It does to a certain extent. Now, you know, the local school districts have to follow state laws, which, of course, are passed by our legislature. But in terms of the day-to-day local governance, you know, it is the local school boards that, that you know, orchestrate that. And, you know, it's an important grassroots part of our governmental system. I've always thought that we don't get much closer to the populace as we do in governing boards, because these are basically people who are your neighbors
and are serving without pay.
Without pay.
And let's go back before we say goodbye to you. And you're doing well. I know you've been hampered like so many people with allergies.
Yes.
It's been kind of a tough allergy season for so many people, but you're doing well here. And I want to talk about expanding that whole teacher academy. Are we at the, we're talking earlier about total cost, $1 billion, but was it at $7,000 per household right now?
This is
for
the ESA, the Educational Scholarship
yes.
Fund. Yeah, it's around.
And there's talk of expanding that.
Yes, and and the homeschool parent can, I wouldn't call it a blank check, but I would say a partially written check.
Hmm.
They basically get a debit card, which has some restrictions as to how they can use it. But for example, for each child, you could purchase a computer.
Mm-hmm.
You could purchase instructional supplies. You could purchase textbooks, curriculum materials. There's a lot of opportunities to use that money. And again, it's through a debit card, which, by the way, is not working out too well right now. There's been a lot of glitches in the reimbursement system, which I think Superintendent Horn has been trying to fix, because he came into a situation where this was still not working very properly. And so he's appointed a new administrator, and they're trying to fix that system. But parents are talking about the fact that their debit cards are not working operationally the way
they
should.
So they go to the store, they want to purchase a computer, and they use a debit card?
Yeah.
Issued to them by
exactly.
the state of Arizona?
Yeah, exactly.
And guess who who's paying for that? Myself as a taxpayer
yes.
for the state of Arizona.
Yes. But remember, there's a debit card for each child. So you've got five children in your family. You've got a debit card for each one. And so you can't use it to buy food. You can't. But you... things that you buy might supplant some of your other expenses. So,
and does anyone audit what someone buys or how carefully is
that? Yeah, there's some degree of audit okay. because there are certain things, there are limitations of what you can buy. But it's still pretty generous. It's still pretty generous. And again, generous to the extent that, remember, you're getting this allocation.
Yes.
But nobody's asking you to demonstrate hours mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. classroom, attendance in the classroom, none of these things.
Basically, no accountability.
No accountability.
All right.
No.
Dr. Robert Henry.
It's very frustrating.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks and John, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster urging everybody stick around. We've got Dave Ramsey, his very popular show about money and how to really budget your money so you're not in a lot of debt, which is not a good thing. All right. We will pause right here. Be back in 23 hours approximately with another edition of the Buckmaster Show. I hope everybody has a great afternoon and evening. Thanks.